A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my good colleague, Ambassador Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, to help me with South Asia's mystery, which is the government of Pakistan in the hands of the army. Not just the army. Right now, a man named Field Marshal Asim Munir, who has been in the news in the United States recently, not one but two visits to Donald Trump in the Oval Office. Mr. Trump has colorfully called him my favorite field marshal, which is both admiring and slightly distancing. Question is, why is this report in place? Pakistan's lower house of parliament, writes the FT, has approved a constitutional amendment giving national strongman Field Marshal Asim Munir legal immunity for life and an expanding his control over the military. Mr. Ambassador, a very good day to you. I need to understand what it is that the legislature and indeed the 250 million people of Pakistan, a troubled country with an economy that is not functioning at high rates, what it is that they get by offering immunity for life and an effective control of the government to a field marshal. Do we need to know who he is, or is it his office they're endorsing? Good evening to you.
Good evening. John, Pakistan is and has always been a complex country. It was carved out of British India, ostensibly for the Muslim majority portions of what was then a unified India. Since its inception, it has been dominated by the military, because when the partition occurred, what is today Pakistan got a greater portion of the British Indian Army than it did of British India's economic resources. The military has been the dominant institution. It has taken power directly four times, and now it governs from the shadows. So it's not anything new that the military is the dominant institution. It's also not new that the guy who heads the military ends up being the most powerful man in the country. General Asim Munir, who became field marshal after the recent conflict with India, is slightly different. Different in the sense that he has even greater ambitions than some of the previous military rulers of the country. On the one hand, he doesn't want to take power directly, meaning he doesn't want to proclaim himself president, at least not for now. At the same time, he wants to have all the privileges and immunities that the president of Pakistan has. And that's what this amendment is about. Second, Pakistan has a pretty strong and effective air force. It also has a navy, but it's the army that is politically the most influential. And in this constitutional amendment, Asim Munir has become chief of defense forces rather than being chief of army staff. What that means is that the air force and the navy also come under him. It enables him to have a more unified approach to military planning. And that makes many of his critics wonder whether he's thinking about trying to use the Pakistan military's nuclear capabilities and other capabilities and his newfound acceptance from President Trump as a basis to try and settle once and for all Pakistan's longstanding disputes with India. They're not going to be settled, in my opinion, but they might be in his opinion. And each one of Pakistan's military leaders has always had these simplistic notions of if only the following three or four things are done, Pakistan will be on the road to success and prosperity. It never happens, but that's what Field Marshal Asim Munir has been aiming for. As far as the Pakistani politicians represented in parliament are concerned, there's a long history of them conceding ground to the military as a way of having a share of power themselves. Pakistan's system of governance is more a hybrid system rather than a democratic one. Every now and then there has been a powerful political figure that has challenged the military, but usually the average Pakistani politician prefers to work with the military to be able to have some scraps of power off the table while the military feasts on it.
You mentioned the beginning. Pakistan began in 1947 in a catastrophe that is still talked about everywhere, even though we're not taught it. Millions dead, I believe, is possible. We don't know because everybody fled for their lives from all directions. That was 1947. However, since then, the military has now and again become the control of the country. In fact, the editorial board of the FT says that Munir is as powerful as any dictator since 47. Is that the advantage the army has, that catastrophe? There would still be a collective memory of the horror of it. Is that why the reliance on military affairs?
It's not just the collective memory of what happened in 1947. It's a cultivated notion that Pakistan is forever under threat, that India has not accepted the partition of 1947 and would like to take over Pakistan again, that India was behind the separation of Bangladesh from Pakistan, etc. It just goes on and on. People are taught that in schools. That is the national narrative. It's what brings Pakistan's people together. Pakistan is a country of multiple ethnicities. There was no country in history called Pakistan before 1947. The thing that they had in common was religion. And so it's a state and nation building a narrative in which the military has a very significant and central position. And conflict with India is something that suits the military in terms of maintaining its dominance.
I've looked at photographs from 1947, from the catastrophe, the partition. One photograph tells a story that I don't know. It's Lord Mountbatten and his wife coming down a street of very reduced circumstances. The buildings might be empty. He's got a riding crop in his hand, a symbol of power. What role did the British Empire play in that partition? And does it still have explaining to do to have led to the deaths of millions?
Well, partition was a very complex outcome of many complexities. The political leadership of the Indian National Congress, which was supposed to be the national movement for independence in India, did not comprise too many Muslims. The few that were on it did not have the kind of popularity that Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the founder of Pakistan, had. The British made a commitment to the Muslims of India during the Second World War that if they were willing to join the British Indian Army, that they would consider their priorities and their preferences before making a decision about what happens to India after they leave. And so all of those things came together. The Muslim League was marching in the streets. The party led by Mr. Jinnah, the British felt that they were committed to the Muslims, that they have to consult them or see their point of view before making a decision. And then there was a Labour Party government that had been elected in 1945, soon after the Second World War in Britain, which said, we are not going to continue to hang on to India under any circumstances. So, yes, there was a British role. There are those who would argue that even the Hindu-Muslim divide was basically something the British had fueled as a means of divide and rule while they were in power for many, many years. And towards the end, they are the ones who effected partition. But to say that only they did it would be unfair. I think that there were elements within India who preferred and wanted to have a division of the subcontinent along religious lines.
I'm speaking with Ambassador Hussain Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. That was then. When we come back now, what is to be done, especially along the northwest frontier, where there's constant conflict with the Taliban and with something called the Pakistan Taliban? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.